Welcome to the Estate Planning Experts Podcast. Created by best-selling author and nationally recognized estate planning attorney, Shane Smith. On each episode, we bring together experts in various aspects of estate planning to help you protect your family, your assets, and your peace of mind. To get your free copy of Mr. Smith's Consumer Awareness Guide, How to Avoid the 7 Deadly Sins of Estate Planning, or if you are in Atlanta and are interested in your free Estate Planning for Life consultation, simply register at www.theestateattorneyatlanta.com.
I am here today. I have the good fortune to be interviewing Dr. Nthenga Harrison. Dr. Harrison, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Tell us a little bit about yourself. What inspired you?
I am a physician. My specialties are psychiatry and addiction medicine, and I currently serve as the chief medical officer for Anka Behavioral Health, which is a California-based treatment provider in Northern, Central, and Southern California. And I actually went to medical school to be a surgeon, but as I recognized the effects that sleep deprivation had on my ability to be nice to people, I realized I could choose a different specialty. So, in medical school, you have to develop competency in all of the major organ systems, the brain and neurological system being one. And as I learned about psychiatry, it just really fit as an area that even other physicians don't have a good concept of the importance of maintaining mental fitness and how that affects physical fitness in our entire lives. And I was sold.
And how did you get from there to where you are now?
So I did medical school at the University of Pennsylvania and then chose my specialty as psychiatry and came down to Emory University, where I completed my psychiatry residency. And after that, joined the community and started seeing patients in the Atlanta area, where I still am. I joined my company when they moved into Georgia services from California and have been with them ever since.
And I understand that you specialize a lot in working with folks who are moving through the grieving process. Is that right?
That is right. So I'm a general psychiatrist, so I actually, kind of like your family practitioner or your primary care doctor, treats kind of all physical ailments. I treat kind of all mental or behavioral ailments. And because of the particular population that I work with, which is a lot of individuals who have serious persistent mental illness, addictive disorders, other major psychiatric disorders, they actually have a higher number of experiences with grief and loss than even the average human. And we all know that at some point in our lives, 100% of us will experience at least one loss and more likely more than one loss.
And what do you like most about counseling folks who are moving through the grieving process?
The best part is letting people know that they're not alone. So we have this phenomenon. I'm the campaign psychiatrist for a campaign called Let's Get Mentally Fit that provides a lot of free tools to individuals about mental fitness. And one of our concepts is this idea of being on isolation island. And one of the most gratifying things about working with people who are moving through the process of grief and kind of integrating that loss and being able to redefine their lives without the significant person whom they've lost is that you're not on isolation island. Even though it feels like you're the only person who has ever been in this space, and that makes it feel like it would be impossible to ever get out of this space, and you don't feel like you know anyone who ever successfully made it through a loss like yours, there are tons and tons and tons of people who have. And so once you can normalize the severity and intensity of the grief response of losing someone really close to you, then you can start to kind of pull that person back into the fray of a social support network and see really the color pour back into their lives and their definition of themselves. And it's really a rewarding process.
It sounds like it. What are some of the most common mistakes you see your patients making when losing a loved one?
So, people don't recognize that when you lose a loved one with whom the relationship had conflict, that can actually be a more difficult grief process to navigate than if you lose someone who's really close to you, but that the relationship was well-defined and healthy. And so people will usually think that's the opposite, right? So let's say I'm taking care of a person who lost their mother, but in childhood there was kind of chaos and the mother-child relationship was difficult, and even into adulthood, you know, there was some negativity in that relationship. When that person loses his or her mother, it can actually be more difficult than a person who had a healthy relationship with their mother their entire life, because they have an entire extra layer of emotions that they have to deal with, not just sadness, but also anger mixed with relief, mixed with guilt about being, you know, relieved. So that can really complicate things. So that's the first thing, is to kind of know that the relationship as it existed in life will inform the grief process as it exists in loss. And then the second one, even though I put it second, I think it's the most important, is that you have to let yourself have the grieving process. So as Americans, we're such a culture defined by productivity that, you know, you take your 3 bereavement days of leave that you get off work, and then you just go jump right back in as if life is just supposed to be able to go on. But we really have to give ourselves the opportunity to feel the sadness, to feel the anger, to feel the hurt, you know, to go through all of those Kubler-Ross stages of grief, to, you know, negotiate and question and all of these things, while really building a support system around us that can help us continue to function in our lives in a modified way until we get to the point that we can get back to functioning in a newly defined way. Because you can never go back to what life was before you lost that person. You have to redefine the new you and how you move forward in the context of the grief.
What are some of the ways you help your patients move through that process?
So one is validation, validation, validation. If you're angry, your anger is valid. I let you have your anger, and let's talk about how you can have your anger while at the same time not having that anger disrupt your ability to function. And when I say disrupt your ability to function, I want to be very clear that if you usually work 40 hours per week and you need to go to working part-time, that's not necessarily disrupting your ability to function. Disrupting your ability to function would be continuing to work 40 hours but having so much trouble at work that you start getting disciplinary action. So how can we be proactive about looking at all of the variables in your life that let you have this anger while minimizing the collateral damage? If you feel guilty, let you have it. You feel so sad, you feel like you can't pull yourself up, let you have that. But working together while we're validating those emotions, we're also making a proactive plan about how not to let your grief response be its own set of damaging factors for your life.
So allow the emotion, experience the emotion, validate the emotion, but manage it in such a way that you can experience it without
collateral damage. That's right. That's right. And often, so I could not encourage people enough to get a support system. If you have a personal support system, that's fantastic. A lot of times, though, your personal support system will have experienced the same loss, so that can be difficult if I have to be support for you when I'm doing my own grief process. But if you have that, perfect. If you have a personal support system outside that loss, perfect. If not, get in a support group, get a therapist, you know, get someone who can really help you navigate through the grief process, because that minimizes the chance that you develop what we call a complicated or a complex grief process, which basically means the grief process itself start damaging your life.
That makes total sense. What do you wish, I mean, obviously you've probably helped hundreds of folks through this process.
Mm-hmm.
What do you wish people starting the process knew before they come see you?
I wish they knew that there are support groups. So this is dovetailing right on what I just answered the last question. When you lose a person, the automatic reaction, which is normal, is to feel completely and utterly alone and lost. With the severity and intensity of emotion that many people have never experienced in their lives, the severity and intensity of that emotion alone makes people believe that there's no way anyone else has ever been through it, and tons of people have been through it. So the very first thing is, as soon as you lose someone, even though your biological response literally is to hibernate and crawl into a cave, never to be seen again, like that's what your biological response is pushing you to do, I want people to resist that urge and instead spread their arms out to every single person that could possibly be a support system. And if there aren't enough people that you know off the top of your head, like I said, Google a bereavement or a grief group in your area. There is one.
Great advice. Without revealing any names, because obviously you've got privacy policies and confidentiality policies to protect the identities of your patients, can you share a hypothetical recent case and how you, what they were dealing with and how you were able to help them move through that process and what that looked like when they were on the other side of it?
Sure, absolutely.
We can call them Mr. and Mrs. Jones.
We'll call them Mr. and Mrs. Jones. So it actually was Mr. and Mrs. Jones, because in this specific case was a couple that carried a baby all the way to almost term. Went into labor 5 days early, and then lost the baby.
Oh, my God.
Right. It's devastating. It is devastating. And so, you know, clearly the hospitals actually are really good about letting parents who have lost infants know that there are support groups. And so they try to put support immediately in place, which was excellent. But in working with this couple, one of the things that the mother said was, I went back to work, and she ended up taking like 6 weeks off, which was excellent for her. That may not be excellent for everyone. So the message here is that there's not one formula that fits all. Some people will need to go back to work because that'll be a great distraction. Other people won't be able to go back to work for other reasons. So she took like 6 weeks and was working through her stages of grief, and you know, we had support in place and it was doing great. And when she got back to work, she had a resurgence and felt like she walked backwards in her grief process, because when she got to work, people didn't know what to say to her. And so she kind of felt outcast. So remember I said, refuse that reflex to get on isolation island. She had worked so hard to be off of isolation island, but when she went back to work, unintentionally, her colleagues kind of thrust her back on isolation island because they just didn't know what to say. They didn't know how to approach her. And so one thing that has been really successful is planning for those transitions. So if you've been out of work or you've been out of a specific part of your life that, you know, you put on a side burner while you went through your grief process, working with your support system, especially if you have a professional in place, to make a plan for what it might be like when you go back. And if a person seems like they don't know what to say, what can you say, right, to mitigate that situation? How can you plan ahead? So when you go in, and some people can use humor, and some people, you know, will be super afraid that they're going to start crying at work, and other people will be afraid they're going to be too angry. And so anticipating what your response might be and then giving you a toolbox of ways that you can respond or even be proactive about approaching people at work so that you don't get thrust back on isolation island.
That makes total sense. Who is an ideal patient for you?
an ideal, well, you know, I take all comers. So I am the chief medical officer for Anka Behavioral Health right now. So I actually don't carry my own patient load. I do mostly administrative work and manage our medical staff and our programs. But if you go to our website, www.ankabhi.org, pardon the shameless plug, we have a fantastic array of services that really treat the entire person, adolescents to adults, addiction to other mental illnesses, to intellectual disabilities. And so I would say we have something in place for almost everyone. So you can surf through our programs, and if it looks like it fits, give us a call.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Harrison, for joining us today. You've been a wealth of knowledge. And if folks are resonating this, we highly encourage them to, again, visit you at your website. And thank you so much for doing the interview.
Thank you so much for doing an interview on this topic.
Okay, everyone, we'll see you next time.